We're going to start from the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph on the first line. The Mishnah told us yesterday, Lo Choltzin v'lo Miyamin, that you can't do Chalitza or Yibam on Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, V'ha mitzvah ka'avid, isn't that a mitzvah? Why does the Mishnah refer to that only as a Rishos? So the Gemara says, no, Lo Tzricha di'ika gadol, u'mitzvah b'gadol yabim. This is a famous din from Maseches Yevamos, which is, let's say you have multiple brothers, and let's say one of the brothers died and left his wife childless, so now there's a potential for Yibam or Chalitza. So the din is that L'chadchila, the oldest surviving brother is supposed to be the one to do Yibam or Chalitza. B'di'evet, if one of the younger brothers jumped the gun and did it, B'di'evet, it would still be okay. So the Gemara says the reason why the Mishnah refers to Yibam or Chalitza merely as a Rishus and not as a mitzvah is because if it's not dealing with the oldest brother, then it's not technically a mitzvah. And the Gemara explains, V'chulu taimamai, gzeir Hashem yichtov. The reasoning behind all these halachas, the reason why you can't get married on Shabbos or Yontif and you can't do Yibam or Chalitza, all those things, all revolve around a gzeir derabanan, lest you come to right. Because all of these activities, marriage, Yibum, Chalitza, all involve some kind of a shtar being written up. Again, Rashi goes through all the cases. You have to write either a ksuba, you have to write a shtar for Chalitza, a shtar for Yibum. So in all these cases, because there's a shtar that's necessary, we say don't do this on Shabbos or Yontif, lest you come to write up the shtar. Okay, then we said the Eluhin Mishum Mitzvah, Lo Magdishin, Velo Ma'arichin, Velo Macharimin, Gzera Mishum Mekechu Memkar. Again, all these activities in the Mishnah that are otherwise mitzvos, like for example, pledging to give something to Hekdesh, or pledging to give somebody's erichin, right, to give their value or your own value to the Mikdash, or macharimin is when you pledge to give something to the Berek HaBayis, to the upkeep of the Mikdash. The reason why those activities are usher on Shabbos or Yontif is because it looks too much like you're involved in business, like you're involved in a business transaction. Then we said, Velo Magbian Trumos and Maestros. So the Gemara says, Pshita, we know that you're not allowed to separate Trumos and Maestros on Shabbos or Yontif. We spoke about this already 100 times. This Masechta, there's an Isra de Rabbanan based on Makeb Epatah to do that. What's the Chiddush? What's the Mishnah teaching us that we didn't already know? So the Gemara says, Tani Rav Yosef, Lo Nitzrcha El Litna L'Chomin Bo Bayom, V'Han Emilia Peri De Tevile Me Esmol, Aval Peri De Tevile Ha'idna, Kegon Isal Yafrushe Mina Chala, Mafrushinan V'Yohavinan L'Chomin. The Gemara says, the Chiddush is as follows. Let's say my intention was to separate Truma, Meiser, or in this case, let's say to do Afrushes Chala, and then to give it to the Kohen right away. One could have argued that perhaps that would be permissible on Yontif, because that's more like Ochel Nefesh, because the Kohen's going to eat it right away. So the Kamash that no, that even that's a problem on Shabbos and Yontif. But the Gemara clarifies that this isser of giving truma, meiser, etc. on Shabbos or Yontif is only if the produce became tevel beforehand. So you could have easily separated trumas and meisros before Shabbos or Yontif. But let's say it became, let's say, for example, when it comes to Yontif. So we know, of course, that you're allowed to bake on Yontif, ochel nefesh. So let's say the dough that I'm baking took on the status of chala on Yontif itself. So then the Gemara says, then you're allowed to do afreshes chala on Yontif because it only became tevel or chala on Yontif itself, you could do a fresh chala and give it to the Kohen. So the Gemara asks, V'hani mishum mishus ika mishum shavus leika, V'hani mishum mitzvah ika mishum shavus leika. The Gemara is basically asking, if you remember yesterday, we saw in the Mishnah that the Mishnah, you know, essentially separated and categorized all the different activities that we listed into three separate categories of Shavus, Rishus, and Mitzvah. And the question basically is, the Gemara is asking that, don't all of these things overlap with one another? Because, like, for example, in the cases we gave of a Rishus, so a lot of those things can also qualify as a Shavus. Like, for example, we said in the context of Shavus, we said, don't climb a tree and don't dance on Shabbos. And then in terms of Rishus, we said don't adjudicate court cases, don't do Chalitza, don't do Yibam, but those things are also Asur Midrabanan. So the question is why, in other words, it seems to almost to be semantics to be dividing these things into three separate categories. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, lo mi baya kamer, lo mi baya shivus geritza da asur, ela afilu shivus de Rishus nami asur, lo mi baya shivus de Rishus da asur, ela afilu shivus de mitzvah nami asur. Basically, the Gemara is teaching us is that every type of activity is going to be Asur Midrabanan in this mission. No, regardless of whether it's a mitzvah, it's a rishus, everything is basically us from Yidrabban. Okay, then we said, Kol Elu B'Yantif Amr. If you remember, the Mishnah told us that all of these activities were usher on Yantif and Kal V'Chomer on Shabbos, and the Mishnah ended off by citing a famous line from the Mishnah Megillah that the only difference between Shabbos and Yantif is Ochel Nefesh. Now the Gemara is going to question that premise. Ureminu, Mishilin Derech Aruba B'Yontif Avalo B'Shabbos. The opening Mishnah in our Perek told us that you're only allowed to lower fruit through the skyline on Yantif, but not on Shabbos. The basis for that distinction was, we said that on Yantif, there is an issue of, in other words, we said that that on Yontif, the Ochal Nefesh factor overrides the Tircho, or maybe because of the Hefsid, the fruit's going to get ruined in the rain, or whatever it is. So we said on Yontif, that's Mutter, but on Shabbos, even if the fruit's going to get ruined, you're not allowed to move it. So that's not an Ochal Nefesh related, related type of distinction. And yet, our Mishnah seems to be implying that there are further distinctions between Shabbos and Yontif, other than just Ochal Nefesh. To which the Gemara says, no, Amar Rav Yosef Lo Kashya, Ha Rabbi Eliezer, Ha Rabbi Yoshua, Disanya, O Sovies Benosha Naflu Labor. So the Gemara says that really the answer to this question is that our Mishnah in the beginning of the Perek is really reflecting only the opinion of one Tana. The Gemara references a Gemara Masechah Shabbos that talks about the following case. Let's say you have two animals, a mother and her child, that fall into a pit on Yontif. Now, we know that there's an Isra D'Oraisa called Osovies Beno Lo Tishchatu B'Yom Echad. You can't shech the mother and her child on the same day. It's an Isra D'Oraisa. You can't do that. So now the problem is like this. If the two animals fell into the pit, so what right do I have to save both animals? In other words, you can't claim Ochal Nefesh on Yontif because there's an Isra to shech both of those animals on the same day. So the question is, what do you do? So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Male Asar Rishon Amanas L'Shochto V'Shochto V'Hasheni Oselo Parnasa B'Mekomo Kedei Shelo Yamos. Rabbi Hoshua Omer, Male Asar Rishon Amanas L'Shochto V'Eino Shochto V'Chozer Umarim Umale Hasheni Rotza Zeshochet Rotza Zeshochet. So this is the Machlokas. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he says you cannot save both animals on Yontif. You have to pick one of them, save one of them, and shech that one. The other one, what you do is you just throw food into the pit, feed it until Yontif's over. When Yontif's over, you'll pull it out of the pit. However, Rabbi Yehoshua disagrees and says, no, you can save both of the animals. How do you go about doing that? Basically, you pull up the first animal and you essentially pretend like you're going to shecht it. Then you don't shecht it. Then you pull up the second one. And then after that, you can just kind of decide which one you want to shecht. That's what the Gemara refers to as ha'aramba. You're basically doing some kind of a, legal trickery, essentially. So basically, this machlokas as to whether you can salvage both animals is essentially a question of, is there a further distinction that's not necessarily Ochal Nefesh related between Shabbos and Yontif? So it sounds like according to Rabbi Eliezer, he's the one who tells us that everything's exactly the same, that just as on Shabbos I can't salvage these two animals, so too on Yontif, whereas Rabbi Yoshua seems to be disagreeing. So the Gemara is now going to push back on this. Amar le Abaye Mimai, Dil Ma'ad Kan Lo Ka'amar Rabbi Eliezer Hasam, Ela De Efshar Bifarnasa, Aval Hacha De Lo Efshar Bifarnasa Lo. So the Gemara tries to deflect this. The Gemara says, well, maybe the reason why Rabbi Eliezer says he can't save both animals in this case is because there's a very easy way to just keep the other animal alive, which is by feeding it. Just throw food into the pit, save it after Yontif. But maybe Rabbi Eliezer would agree that in the case of lowering the fruit, where if I don't move the fruit off the roof, it's going to get ruined by the rain, perhaps Rabbi Eliezer agrees that I'm allowed to move it. Maybe he says that in general, there really are no other distinctions between Shabbos and Yontif other than Ochal Nefesh. It happens to be that in this case, because there's another way to salvage the animal without pulling it out of the pit, therefore I'm not allowed to do that. That's one possible deflection. Inami, ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yehoshua hasam, elo de efsher li'yarume, aval hacha de lo efsher li'yarume lo. Another possible distinction is within Rabbi Yehoshua, that maybe the only reason why Rabbi Yehoshua allows you to save both animals here is because you can employ this trickery, this ha'arama, right? You could say, I'm going to pull out the first one, pretend like I'm going to shecht it, and then change my mind, and then shecht the other one. That concept of ha'arama doesn't apply in the case of the fruit. In other words, if you don't move the fruit off the roof, it's going to get ruined. You can't be like, I'm going to pretend to lower it and pull it back, right? That concept, doesn't translate to the case of the fruit. So the Gemara says, you're right. Yeah, sorry, but go ahead.
Rabbi, would it make any difference if you knew that one of those animals, they were going to die, but that's irrelevant?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, that might have a role, because if it's going to die naturally, then obviously you can't shecht it anymore. So, again, maybe. I don't know. You have to figure out exactly what the case is, but, potentially it could have some ramification. Okay, so the Gemara says, Elo Amar Papa Lo Kashya. The Gemara says, really, this machlokas, this question as to is the only difference between Shabbos and Yontif Ochal Nefesh, or are there other differences, is really a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. This not, Mishnah Masechah Shabbos, Beis Shammai Omrim, Ein Motzien Lo Es Hakatan, Velo Es Halula, Velo Es Sefer Torah L'Rishus Harabim, Uveis Hillel Matirin. Right? So, according to Beis Shammai basically assume that Shabbos and Yontif, except for Ochal Nefesh, are identical. So, just as on Shabbos, we know that there's an Isur Doreis of Hotza, you can't carry anything in Rishus Harabim, you can't carry a Torah, you can't carry a lulav on Sukkot. That's why even when the first day of is Shabbos, you can't carry the lulav. You can't carry a child who can't walk on their own. Again, we spoke a lot about this back in Masechah Shabbos also. So Beis Shammai says all those same restrictions apply on Yontif. So Beis Shammai think that the only difference between Shabbos and Yontif is Ochal Nefesh, and that's it. Whereas Beis Hillel say no. Beis Hillel say that just because on Shabbos I can't carry a Sefer Torah or a child or a lulav, on Yontif I'm allowed to. So according to Beis Hillel, there are obviously other distinctions other than just Ochal Nefesh between Shabbos and Yontif. So the Gemara pushes back. The Gemara says no. Dil Malohi Ad Kan Lo Kamri Beis Shammai Hasam Ela Ahutza Avala Tiltolo. To which the Gemara then says, perhaps Beis Shammai only said this halacha specifically regarding Hotzah. So Hotzah is one of the 39 malachas. So one could argue, okay, so for Hotzah, which is a malacha to carry in the Rishus, so there you could argue that Beis Shammai is going to tell you that just as on Shabbos, it's Asur so to Anyatev. But Tiltul, just moving an item, let's say it's rooted in carrying in Muktzah, so that's something which is only Midrabanan. So to which the Gemara then says, what do you mean? Atu Tiltul, lav tzorech Hotzahu? But what do you mean? The whole Isser of Hotzah, the whole malacha of Hotzah, is only violated when you carry something. So carrying is like the first stage of Hotzah. So in other words, if Beis Shammai is claiming that these things are Asur on Yantif, then he must also assume that everything is basically the equivalent between Shabbos and Yantif, except for Ochel Nefesh. Okay. So the Mishnah tells us, this is a very technical Mishnah, where the Mishnah is now defining halachos that relate to the dinim of Tchumen. Now, even though, as we just noted a second ago in the Gemara, there is no Isser to carry, there's no need for an Erev on Yantif, right? A regular Yantif, there's no need for an Erev you can carry normally, you can carry in the Rosh Harabim, there's no Isser of Hotzah on, again, because as Beisela just noted, on Yantif, but there is an Isser of Tchumen. Again, the whole Isser of Tchumen in the first place is only Midrabanan, but we assume that the Isser of not walking beyond the Tchum does in fact apply to Yantif. So now the question becomes like this: I have an animal, or I have the utensil, or whatever it is, so the question is, where exactly am I allowed to walk with that item? So the Mishnah tells us that the tchum, the boundary of the animal or the utensil, will be limited by wherever your specific Erev Tchumen happens to be. Wherever you're allowed to walk, that's where you can walk with those items as well. So then the Mishnah says, Hamoser behemto livino oleroe, hare ilu keragli habaylim. Let's say I hand my animal over to my son to watch, or to a shepherd to watch, or whatever the case may be. So then those animals still are going to follow my reshus, or my tchum, the area where, in other words, the boundary where I'm allowed to walk. We'll see in the Gemara that not everyone agrees to this, but the Mishnah assumes, at least for right now, that it's going to follow my personal tchum. Then the Mishnah says, Kelim ha-miyuchadin le'echad mena'achin shebebayis hare'ilu keraglav, v'she'ein miyuchadin hare'ilu kemakom shaholchem. Then the Mishnah says the following. Let's say there is a utensil in the house. There's multiple brothers living in the house. So if the kli belongs to one specific brother, then the tchum of that kli is limited to wherever that brother's tchum happens to be. If the kli belongs to everybody in the family, then it's going to be basically limited by everyone's tchum. So if every brother, every person in the family has a different boundary, has a different tchum, it's going to be limited by wherever all their tchumen are. Then the Mishnah says, "Ashol kli mechaviru me'erev yantiv kiragle hashoel b'yantiv kiragle hamashil." So if I borrowed a kli from somebody on erev yantiv, so then I basically become the owner, quote unquote, of that kli. So when Yantif begins, it's going to follow my tchum, but if I borrowed it on Yantif itself, if I actually got the kli on Yantif itself, then it's going to follow the mashil, the tchum of the lender. Then the Mishnah says, let's say that a woman went ahead and borrowed spices, salt, water from her friend. She was baking dough, she was making bread, and she needed to, to bake on Yantif. So the Mishnah tells us that those, the water, salt, and spices, etc., that she was borrowing, are going to be limited to the tchum of both of them, both the borrower and the lender. However, Rabbi Huda says that in the context of the water specifically, the water is not limited to either of their tchumim because it doesn't have any substance. What does that mean? So Rashi says that when you throw water into a pot and you mix it with other things, you can't necessarily distinguish the water from anything else. So the water kind of gets lost in the shuffle, so Rabbi Huda thinks that the water is not going to be limited by the tchumim of the two women. Okay, so the Gemara now points...
Yeah. A little confused.
Yeah.
And if brothers that are living in the same house have a different tchum unless one set up an Eruv.
That could be the case. They could have set up a different Eruv tchumen. Again, we're gonna get to a lot of these details in a second in the Gemara. We'll see. Okay, so the Gemara says Masnisin delo kerabbi dosa. Our Mishnah seems to be against Rabbi Dosa. Desanya, Rabbi Dosa Omer v'amri la b'shol Omer halokeach behima mechaveru me'erev yantif. Afal pishalo masrulo elo biyantif, harehi kiragle halokeach, the hamuser behema laroa, afal pishalo masrulo elo biyantif, harehi kiragle haroa. Rabbi Dosa slash Abishol say the following. Let's say I purchased an animal from someone else in Erev Yantif, even though the guy, the seller, only actually gave me the animal on Yantif itself, so not the tchum of that animal follows me as the purchaser, as the buyer. And the same would be true if, let's say, I made an agreement with the shepherd to watch my animal on Yantif, but I made that agreement on Erev Yantif, even if I only actually handed him the animal on Yantif itself, the tchum of that animal is going to follow the shepherd. That seems to go against the Mishnah, because our Mishnah told us that you follow the tchum of the owner, of the original owner, not of the shepherd or of the buyer, to which the Gemara says, no, afilu tema rabbi dosa vilo kasha kan beroa echad kan b'shnei roim dekanami dekatani livno ola roa shmamina. The Gemara distinguishes and says that one case, that it depends how many shepherds are there in the city. So let's say there's only one shepherd in the city. There's only one guy who watches animals in the city. So then you know going in, you know on Erev Yontif already who you're going to give the animal to. So in that case, the tchum of the animal will be limited by the shepherd's tchum, not by your tchum. But let's say there are multiple shepherds. There's two shepherds in the city, or there's more than two shepherds, or there's more than one shepherd who lives in the city, and you don't know necessarily which one you're planning to give it to yet. So then it's going to, then the default is that it's going to be following your own tchum until such time that you clarify which of the shepherds you're going to give it to. Okay.
Well, why do we care about a tchum of an animal or a keli?
Because you're not allowed to bring that. In other words, because from your perspective, you're not allowed to walk with that animal or that kli beyond wherever your tchum is. That animal or kli.
That's correct. Where your tchum is.
Well, again, the question becomes whose tchum is significant. That's what we're trying to figure out here. Is it the borrower? Is it the lender? Is it the shepherd? Is it the owner? Is it me? Is it the brother? All these cases are trying to figure out who owns the item, the animal, at the time Yontif begins. That's the issue here, right? That's exactly what we're trying to figure out. That's why every case there's, you know, a different sock in every case, because all the details are significant here. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Barchanam Rabbi Yochanan Halacha K'Rabbi Dosa. Comes the Gemara and says, we paskin like Rabbi Dosa, basically that you follow the purchaser, that you follow the shepherd, against what the Mishnah said, even though the Mishnah said that you follow the original owner. But in this case, if you made an agreement to give the animal over or to sell the animal to Erev Yontif, even if you only handed the animal over on Yontif itself, so according to Rabbi Dosa, we actually, you follow the tchum of either the buyer or the shepherd. So asks the Gemara, Mi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, is that true? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha K'stam Mishnah, Usnan, Habehimav There's a famous principle throughout Shas that Rabbi Yochanan generally always paskins like a Stam Mishnah. When a Mishnah is not attributed to a specific Tana, so Rabbi Yochanan typically paskins like a Stam Mishnah. And our Mishnah back on the previous summit said explicitly that in this type of scenario, you follow the tchum of the original owner, not the tchum of the buyer or the tchum of the shepherd. So how could Rabbi Yochanan go against what it says in the Stam Mishnah? So the Gemara says, what do you mean? The lavo kimna kan baroa echad kan mishnei rom. What do you mean? We just said a second ago in the Gemara that the answer to that contradiction is that it depends how many shepherds are in the city. If there's only one shepherd and you knew in advance that you were going to give the animal to him, then it follows his tchum. But if there's more than one shepherd and you did not know in advance, then it's going to follow the tchum of the original owner. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Shnayim sheshoalu cholok echad b'shutfus, ze lilich b'shachris leves ha-medrish, ve ze likonis bo'arvis leves ha-mishteh, ze iriv alav la-tzafon, ve ze iriv alav la-darom, ze she iriv alav la-tzafon, mahalich la-tzafon, kirag le-mi sh'arav alav la-darom, ve ze sh'arav alav la-darom, mahalich la-darom, kirag le-mi sh'arav alav la-tzafon, ve'im mitza'o es ha-tchum, harei ze lo yezizena mimakoma. So basically, the Gemara says the following. Let's say two guys, Reuven and Shimon, borrowed some kind of a cloak, a suit jacket, whatever it was, in partnership. And they made the following agreement. So Reuven said, I'm gonna wear the suit jacket, the cloak, whatever it is, in the morning to go learn in the base medrash. And then Shimon said, I'm gonna wear it in the evening to go to some kind of a dinner party, whatever the case was. So basically the question now becomes, so how far can you carry this cloak, the suit jacket, whatever, on Yontif? So the Gemara says basically it depends like this, that let's say Reuven made his tchum to the north and Shimon made it to the south or vice versa, whatever it is. So basically the Gemara says that the tchum of this jacket, coat, whatever, is going to be limited to both of their tchumen. So in other words, wherever the farthest point that the two of them together are allowed to walk, that's where you could take the coat. And the Gemara tells us that if the two of them, if their tchumen end in the middle, meaning let's say for example, Reuven made his tchum 2,000 amos to the south, and then Shimon made it another 4,000 amos away to the north. So basically the end of their tchum is 2,000 amos in the middle, which basically means that there's no overlap whatsoever between the two of their tchumen, then you're not allowed to move the coat at all because there's no way, there's no overlapping spot where that coat is allowed to go. Okay, then the Gemara says, Itmar, Shnayim shalok chavis uvehima b'shutfas, Rav Amar Chavis Muteras Uvehim Asura, Ushmuel Amar Chavis Nami Asura. So the Gemara says like this. Let's say two people purchased either a barrel of wine or an animal that they ultimately wanted to shecht and divide up the meat. They purchased it in partnership. So now the question is, are you allowed to, in other words, where exactly are you allowed to walk with this animal, this barrel on Yontif? So Rav says that the barrel you're allowed to walk with wherever you want, but the animal you're not allowed to. And Shmuel says even the barrel is problematic. So the Gemara says, Maika Savarav. What's the logic here? Ika Savar Yesh Breira Afilu Behema Tishtere. The famous principle we spoke about before of Breira, right? Literally retroactive clarification. In other words, at the time that Yontif began, we didn't know who was getting which part of the barrel, who was getting which cut of meat. We didn't know that yet because nothing had happened yet. And then eventually on Yontif, when we divvied up the wine or when we divvied up the meat, so now we figured out, okay, who gets which part of the wine, which part of the meat. So if Rav subscribes to the principle of Breira, that we do say that there's retroactive clarification, so then we should say that even the animal is permissible because ultimately we figured out which person gets which cut of the meat. So we should say that that meat is going to follow your personal tum. And on the other hand, if Rav denies the principle of Breira, then it should even be usher to carry the barrel because since you didn't know at the time Yontif began who was getting which part of the wine, so then it should be usher to move the barrel at all. So in other words, Rav's middle opinion seems to be very difficult. So the Gemara says, no. La'olam kasavar yesh brera, v'shanya behema dekayan ke tchumin mehadad. The Gemara says, really, Rav does subscribe to brera. The reason why he thinks that you're not allowed to carry or to move this animal is because when an animal is alive, you can't really divide it up per se. Because an animal, when it's alive, all the organs, all the limbs are working in consonance with each other. They're all connected. You can't, in other words, for example, as opposed to a barrel of wine where you could say, okay, I own this half, you own that half, you can't really divide up the meat of an animal when it's still alive. Everything's really still connected. So since at the time it was alive, you couldn't really make that division, so therefore it wasn't shaykh to say that, you know, when, in other words, like eventually when we shecht it, then we'll figure out how to divide. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Amri li Rav Kahana v'Ravasi l'Rav, li'isr muktzel o chashashu, li'isr tchum in chashashu. So now the Gemara has a much more basic problem here, which is that this whole discussion we've been having has all revolved around the issue of tchumen. In other words, we've been so concerned about the barrel and about the animal. Where are you allowed to walk with it? Is it within your tchum? The Gemara says there's a much more basic problem here, which is, in other words, isn't this going to be mukta? What's the mukta issue here? The mukta issue is that the other half of the barrel or the other part of the meat that's not mine, that's going to belong to the other guy, I clearly did not have in mind to use that on Yontif, right? That was clearly pushed out of my mind. So the Gemara says there's a much more basic problem. Forget about the issue of tchumen. I shouldn't be allowed to handle this in the first place. This whole thing is mukta because of the guy's other half of the wine or the meat that I clearly never planned to use. To which the Gemara says, Shasik Rav. Rav was silent. In other words, he didn't know how to respond to that. So my havela, what was the maskana in terms of the question of Breira? So the Gemara says, Rav Hoshia amar yesh Breira, Rav Yochanan amar im Breira. It's a machlokas. Rav Hoshia says we subscribe to Breira, whereas Rav Yochanan denies it. To which the Gemara says, really, v'savar Rav Hoshia yesh Breira? Does Rav Hoshia really buy into the principle of Breira? V'hasna mishnah meseches ahalos, hames bevayis velo psachim harbe, kulan temeim, niftach echad mehen, hu tamei v'chulan tahorim, chashav lehotzio be'echad mehen, o b'chalon sheyesh bo arval arba, matzeles ala psachim kulan, be'shamay omrim v'hu shechashav ala vad shelo yamas hameis, be'sil omrim af mi sheyamas hameis, ve'itmar ala am Rav Hoshia, letaras apsachim ikanu lahaba in lemafreyelo. So basically the mission almost lays out the following. Let's say you have a dead body in a house, and there are multiple entrances, multiple doorways throughout the house. So in other words, the starting point is that every entranceway, every doorway, all the contents, all the kalim, the people, everything within that area is going to become tameh. However, let's say one of the doorways or entranceways was opened. In other words, indicating you were planning to carry the body dafka out through that doorway and not through any of the other ones. So then that one doorway and all the contents therein become tameh, whereas everything else remains tahor. But then the Mishnah says, let's say you were planning to carry the body through one of the doorways or through one of the windows. So that is going to spare all the rest of the doorways and windows, meaning that one entrance, that one doorway will become tummy and all the contents therein, but all the other entranceways and doorways will remain tahor. However, there's a technical machlokas in the Mishnah between Bishamai and Bishilel as to whether that intention of carrying the body through a specific doorway to spare all the rest of the doorways, does that have to happen before the guy dies? That's Beis Shammai. Somebody says, you have to already have that in mind before the guy dies. Whereas Beis Hillel say, no, even after the guy dies, you can have in mind to carry through the specific doorway. However, Rav Hoshia qualifies Beis Hillel's position and says that even according to, in other words, even Beis Hillel who say that you can even have that intention after the guy dies, it's only going to help to salvage the other doorways from now on. It's not going to change the status of what happened beforehand. In other words, for example, Beis Hillel would say, in other words, according to Rav Hoshia's version of Beis Hillel, this is what the conclusion would be. Let's say a guy died and there were multiple doorways and multiple kalim and whatever, and then two seconds later you said, oh, by the way, I want to take him out through that doorway. Everything already became tummy. It's too late. In other words, because it's only going to rectify and salvage anything moving forward. It's not going to have the ability to retroactively save anything. So the Gemara says, doesn't that indicate that Rav Hoshia, in fact, denies the principle of Breira? Because if he subscribed to Breira, then why then why couldn't I retroactively salvage all the other entrance ways? You know, so that, so the Gemara says lechora, he denies bray. Which the Gemara says you're right. Epoch Rav Hoshi Amar Ein Bray, Rav Yochanan Amar Yesh Bray. The Gemara says you're right. You have to reverse the shitos. In other words, really, Rav Hoshi is the one who denies bray, and Rav Yochanan is the one who subscribes to it. To which the Gemara says, is that really true? Me isle Rav Yochanan bray. Does Rav Yochanan really subscribe to bray? The Ha'amar of Asiyam Rabbi Yochanan, Ha'achin Shechalku, Lukuchosein, Umachazirin Zelazabiyovel. Let's say you have two brothers who inherited the estate from their father who died. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, those two brothers have the status of Lukuchos, of purchasers. There's Machukis in the Gemara Mesechus Baba Basra, but when brothers inherit something from the estate of their father, do we treat them like Lukuchos, like purchasers, like two guys who bought something, or like Shutfin, like partners? So according to Rabbi Yochanan, they're purchasers, which basically means that when Yovel rolls around, they have to pool all the estate, all the money back together, and they have to redistribute it. They have to redivide everything up in Yovel. If everything already belonged to the brothers and we knew who owned what, then you would not have to redistribute anything during Yovel. So that L'chora, this seems to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan actually denies the principle of Breira. Because if he bought into Breira, why would they have to redistribute everything during Yovel? Maybe you'll argue that Rabbi Yochanan only denies Breira by Dine de Oraisa, like in this case of Yerusha, but by Dine de Rabbanan, perhaps he does subscribe to Breira. The Gemara says that's also not true. Vidurabanan mi islay. In other words, even by Durabanan, he seems to deny Breira. Vahasane ayo, Rabbi Huda Omer, Eno the Masnal Shne Dvarim Ke'echada le'im Bachacham le'mizrach, Eruva le'mizrach, Lemarav Eruva Lemarav, Ilu Lechanu Lechan lo. This is a very technical machlokas we spoke about back in Mesechus Erevan, about the following case. Let's say there are actually two cases in the Mishnah in Erevan. So one case is where there are two Tamidei Chacham coming to town on Shabbos or Yantif, and you want, and one's coming from the east and one's coming from the west, and you don't know which lecture you want to go hear yet. So there's a machlokas in the Mishnah. Can I just basically set up two Erev Tchumins that are contingent? In other words, you basically say, I'm going to put one to the east, one to the west, and then on Shabbos, I'll figure out which rabbi I want to go listen to. So according to the Chacham, that's fine. That works. You can do that. But Rabbi Huda says that you cannot do that. Rabbi Huda says you can't set up two opposite Erev Tchumins. You have to basically make up your mind. But he does agree that, let's say there's only one rabbi coming, you just don't know if he's coming from the east or the west. So then Rabbi Huda says that's okay. In that case, he says you can make your Erev Tchumen on both sides, and then you'll figure it out. The question basically is, why does Rabbi Huda make this distinction? In other words, if Rabbi Huda denies Breira, then seemingly he should deny Breira across the board. What's the difference between two rabbis who are coming from different directions, or one rabbi where I don't know which direction he's coming from? Meaning, if you deny Breira, then Rabbi Huda presumably should say that the Erev Tchumen is no good even in the second case, even in the case where there's one rabbi where you just don't know which direction he's coming from. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Uchvar B'chacham, Alma Leisle L'Rabbi Yochanan Breira. So Rabbi Yochanan qualifies that Gemara in Erevin and says that the case is where the rabbi already came when Shabbos began, you just happened to not know which direction he came from, but he was already there. So presumably, you see from this Gemara in Erevin that Rabbi Yochanan denies the principle of Breira, because if he subscribed to Breira, so then why do you need the fact that the rabbi was there already? Even if the rabbi wasn't there when Shabbos began, it shouldn't matter. If you subscribe to Breira, we should say that retroactively, once he comes, we'll figure out which direction he came from, and the Erev Tchumen should be valid retroactively. So the Gemara says, you're right. El Eliolam Lo Tepach. Really, we should not reverse the Shittas. Really, Rabbi Yochanan denies Breira. V'chileis Leila Rabbi Oshia Breira Bida Oraisa V'Bida Rabbanan Islay. Rabbi Oshia only denies Breira by Dine de Oraisa, but by Dine de Rabbanan, like in the case of Erev Tchumen, he will subscribe to it. And then finally, the Gemara says, Darash Mar Zutra, Halach Rabbi Oshia, that's how we paskin. And then the last part of the Gemara, Amar Shmuel, Shor Shal Patam HaReyu Karagli Kol Adam, Shor Shal Roa HaReyu Karagli Oso HaIr. Again, this is kind of more related to the previous Gemara. Let's say you have a guy whose job it is to fatten oxen. So that guy doesn't necessarily plan to, you know, to sell the ox only to the people who live in a city. He could sell them to anyone who comes from anywhere. So the tchum of that animal will follow the tchum of anyone who plans to come and buy the animal. Whereas, if let's say you have a shepherd who basically keeps animals for himself, and every once in a while decides to sell off an animal, he's probably only going to sell it to the people of his city, and therefore the tchum of that animal will be limited only by the people who live in the city.